Now, chapter 3 is called Towards a Genuinely Lay Theology. And I can say that for me personally, this was and is the most interesting of the four chapters. It is, in fact, full of material, full of interesting thoughts and quite thought-provoking reflections. No time to go into it in detail, of course. Now, the bishop refers to four different types of theology, for instance. Now, he borrows the classification from another writer, which he acknowledges, but he makes very interesting use of this classification. The four types of theology are, first of all, the episcopal. That is theology created by bishops in the church in accordance with the needs of their episcopal functions, or teaching functions, pastoral functions. Then monastic theology, theology created in the monasteries in accordance with the needs, the spiritual needs, mystical needs of monks. Then scholastic theology, theology created in the interests of professional thinkers, theologians, philosophers and so on during the Middle Ages. And lastly, seminary theology, theology which is taught in such a way as to equip a person to be a priest. In other words, just professional technical know-how. So these four kinds of theology, episcopal, monastic, scholastic and seminary. Now the bishop says, and this is quite interesting, that we need now, above and beyond all these, a lay theology. He says, episcopal theology was meant to help the bishop teaching people. Monastic theology was meant to help monks living in monasteries. Scholastic theology was meant to help people who were interested in calculating how many angels could dance on a pin's head. And seminary theology was created for the sake of helping people who wanted to be priests or to be clergymen. But he said, what about the lay people? They're after all the majority of the church, as he points out. That the majority of the Buddhist movement too, as we know. So he said, what is needed is a theology for them. In other words, he says, what is wanted is a statement of Christianity, not in terms of episcopal administration or monastic life or scholastic preoccupations or seminary requirements, but a statement of Christianity in terms of the life of lay people, in terms of lay life. Of course, he doesn't mean, I don't also mean, merely a verbal statement, but a whole fully-fledged sort of expression. So I would take up this point among the many which the bishop has raised as being of great interest. It applies to Buddhism too, because I would say that we also need a lay, I can't say theology because we don't have a theos, so no theology, we also need a lay, I can't say even Buddhology, but we need a statement of Buddhism, Buddhist principles, Buddhist truths, in addition to the existing ones which we have, a statement in terms of lay life. Traditionally, as you know, Buddhism is a strongly monastic movement. Throughout the generations, throughout the centuries, the Sangha, the monastic order, has been the backbone of the Buddhist community. Dr. Condon goes so far as to say, without the Sangha, Buddhism just wouldn't have survived at all. So there are historical reasons for this predominance of the Sangha, central part played by the Sangha. We've no time to go into them now. But one practical result has been that in Buddhism, traditionally, the teaching of Buddhism, or the presentation of Buddhism, is cast in a predominantly monastic form. In other words, the teaching is cast in a form adapted more to the requirements of monks living in monasteries or hermitages than to the requirements of lay people. It is in fact very rarely cast in lay form. There are few discourses in all the collections of the scriptures meant especially for lay people, but for, I would guarantee that for every one meant for lay people, there are 99 meant for monks. In other words, Buddhism is predominantly cast in a form acceptable to, useful to, monks. Very rarely cast in lay forms. Now, this sometimes gives the impression, the quite wrong impression, that Buddhism is a purely monastic religion, and that in Buddhism there's no place for a laity. And there are some scholars who hold this view. In India, one will find it quite widespread among Indian scholars, and very often, of course, they're Hindu scholars who want to discourage people from taking an interest in Buddhism, so they say, Buddhism is purely for the monk. And they can, of course, adduce quite a lot of historical evidence to support their contention. And it is true that in some Buddhist countries, the laity play a very, very minor role, a very, very subordinate role. If you ask the average lay Buddhist, say from Ceylon or Burma, or even Tibet, what is the main function of the lay Buddhist? He would say to support the monks. Monks don't work for a living. They're occupied with meditation, study, preaching. So they would say the main duty, the main function of the layman is to support the monks, to look after the monks, to care for them, to provide for them. And alongside that duty, one finds in practice that the lay people have got a sort of crude popular religion of their own. In Ceylon, for instance, as I've mentioned some time ago, the lay people are very devout, they look after the monks, they support the monasteries, but their own religious life often tends to be centred about the Hindu shrines, not so much about Buddhism at all. And some people in Ceylon are quite worried about this. So what we now need to do, what we now need very much to do, is, as it were, to reformulate the principles of Buddhism in terms not only of monastic life, but in terms of lay life. This is something which must be done, especially now that Buddhism has come to the West. We can say, we can claim, it has already been done to some extent in the Mahayana. This was part, we may say, of the Mahayana reform, to try to, as it were, translate the teachings of the Buddha, as far as they could be translated, out of the monastic language in which they had been handed down, into lay terms. And of course, the Mahayana took its stand upon this very beautiful ideal, which we call the Bodhisattva ideal, and it stressed that the lay person, just as much as a monk, could be a Bodhisattva. That is, could take enlightenment as his or her aim or goal. So when we make this sort of restatement, when we try to put Buddhism across, even in the West, in terms of lay life, more than of monastic life, then the Bodhisattva ideal must be our ultimate basis, our ultimate foundation. Though the Mahayana has made this very important, very fruitful start, there is still a very great deal of work to be done, for translating monastic expressions into lay ones. But let me give you just a few examples